Over the course of the liturgical year, we make our ways through the gospel, hearing the accounts of Jesus' ministry from birth to life to death to life eternal. On the first Sunday of the season after Epiphany, we encounter Jesus at the Jordan River. And Matthew tells us, "And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came up from the water, suddenly the heavens opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him, and a voice from heaven said, 'This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased.'" Sound familiar? Today, on the last Sunday after Epiphany, we hear a similar proclamation in the Transfiguration story. "This is my Son, the Beloved, with him I am well pleased." The divine proclamations that bookend the season after Epiphany call our attention to Jesus, God made flesh. Ours is a God who is transcendent, yet immanent. Set apart, yet ever drawing near. Because we encounter Jesus in our lectionary readings from week to week, we get used to him. While that is a good thing, these familiar stories often can become predictable. Our God made human may begin to seem ordinary. However, one aspect of Jesus' ministry that should be familiar does not, for some reason, register with us that way. And it does not become familiar and predictable. And this topic is money. A friend of mine is a stewardship consultant and a person at their parish, upon hearing that he was going to go somewhere else and lead a retreat, said to him, "I hope you are not going to spend all your time talking about money." And he assured her, "Only as much as Jesus did." Uh-oh. The person seemed quite satisfied with that answer. I bet the person found some comfort in the fact that surely Jesus didn't talk about money all the time. Well, as they say in those cartoons, au contraire, Pierre. Of all the subjects Jesus talked about in his 3-year ministry, money and possessions were the most common. He talked about it everywhere and all the time. He talked about it to the Greeks. He talked about it to the Jews. The young and the old, women, men, those who had it, those who didn't. He did not discriminate on this topic. And I think the reason Jesus spoke so much about money was because it is the one remaining thing we always hold on to. To the exclusion of giving a relatively tiny portion away that can make an unbelievable impact in the world. And perhaps because he knew that this was one of the true paths to earthly joy. So why do we hold on so tightly? Why do we resist such good, godly advice? I think it's because for some crazy reason, we think that God wasn't telling us the truth when God told us that he had given us not only what we need, but more than we need. We just don't trust God very much with that aspect of our lives. And more than anything else, money and all other stuff, by the way, is our false security blanket. We just trust it too much. Stewardship, giving just some, not all, of what God so generously gives us, also reminds us that when we wrench up our courage, God is right. We can do this. In echoes of the children's book, The Little Engine That Could, through stewardship of our money, God constantly is whispering to us, I know you can. I know you can. I know you can. For stewardship is about trusting God. And for whatever reason, that does not come easy to us. We are not automatically wired that way. Maybe we were at one point, but something came loose at the big fall. Or perhaps it is something in our very Episcopalian definition of sin, the seeking of our own will instead of the will of God, thus distorting our relationship with God, with other people, and with all creation. This trusting God stuff is hard work because it pierces our well-crafted armor of self-interest. Trusting God with our money takes practice. But the good news is that we have already begun this practice. We share and risk by sharing all the time. We just don't realize it. Think about encountering something so wonderful that keeping it to yourself simply doesn't work. When that happens, we just can't do it. We have to share. The news of the first pregnancy or the first grandchild simply must be shared. News that good just can't stay quiet for long. Or think about the last time you found a truly wonderful restaurant or played a fantastic new golf course. The first thing that we do with that information is to tell our friends and neighbors. And we do so knowing that with each new sharing, our own next reservation will be tougher to obtain and a good Saturday morning tea time harder to get. We do that. You see, we have been practicing this giving stuff for years. We just didn't know it. What we know deep down is that the joy of sharing always beats the consequences of giving the gift. That's why Jesus made money such an important part of his ministry. It's not about duty, it's about joy. So I'm sure some people are wondering, why is Father Gary standing up there talking about stewardship on Transfiguration Sunday? Or if you give me a little leeway, Transformation Sunday. Well, we have been on a path transforming grace over the past 17 months. And it's been fun. We've explored. We've tried. We've failed. We've succeeded. And for some things, the jury is still out. Your discernment committee is now close to identifying candidates to be your next rector. And you will soon embark on another new journey towards a continuing transformation. There is hope, there is joy, and there is excitement here. And yet, there is also challenge. Our recent pledge drive did not give grace enough to pay the bills for 2020. We are 30 pledges short and $100,000 short. I know we can do better. We want your new rector to come into a sound financial situation, not one where the financial picture is unsettled. I'm sure you all noticed the bright orange pledge cards in your bulletin today. The vestry and I are asking for anyone who is not filled out a pledge card to seriously consider doing so. And for those who have already pledged, pray about possibly increasing your pledge. Now, I went to Swanee, the University of the South. It is a beloved Episcopal institution that raises up well-educated students and trains seminarians to be priests in the wider church. And they have this phrase in their university prayer. It is part of their ethos. It is part of their DNA. It is part of who they are. And the line goes like this. Raise up to the university, we humbly pray thee, a never-failing succession of benefactors. That's what we are called to do as well. To share God's tremendous gifts to us currently and for future generations here at Grace.